We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Coming up, the latest on the Kansas City Royals from our team here at KCSN. All of our Royals content is brought to you by KC Strength and Conditioning. Experts in baseball and softball training for kids ages 8 to 18. If you're in need, you're in luck. John and his crew have sent hundreds of players to college and the pros. That's KC Strength and Conditioning. And now, it's time for the latest updates on your Kansas City Royals.
What's up, y'all? This is One Royal Way here on Kansas City Sports Network. I'm Joel Penfield, Josh Kaiser, and joining Jordan Foote. Joining me as always. How you doing, boys?
I've been better.
Existence is pain. Life has no meaning. All that kind of stuff.
I got a Monarchs hat tonight because it's at a protest for what's currently happening on every baseball diamond the Royals seem to step foot on lately.
I'm doing great. My life is going well. I'm just fine. I'm peachy, and I'm ready to do a podcast with you guys. I'm excited.
I've been watching a lot of baseball that is not being played in Kansas City or Miami, apparently, this week. This show is always brought to you by Kansas City Strength and Conditioning. We appreciate them, day one sponsor here at KCSN. Be sure to check them out if you have a baseball or softball player in the area that needs a place to train. One of the best places in the area for that purpose. Mm-hmm. This is going to try and be about as peachy of an episode as we possibly can go. But unfortunately, that shit's been rolling downhill for so long that I don't know how much longer we'll be able to hold it together. I think we pride ourselves on trying to be as measured and nuanced as we possibly can and be even-handed with it. I hope that we can do our best with that tonight, though I am not hopeful. Just to start out, the losses at this point are what they are. This team is, 18-43 at this point. Like, what's another loss? The thing that's bothered me over the last week or so is that it's just little league terrible mistakes that are just crippling this team right now. And there's a certain amount of stuff that I can excuse away when you're playing six or seven rookies and second-year players in a lineup day in, day out. That's part and parcel with being a young team and losing. Like, there is some stuff, like, sometimes, bad swing decisions, bad at-bats, pitchers not executing the way that we think, pressing with runners in scoring positions. Some of that I can excuse away. And I'm fine with it because that's part of learning. It's getting thrown out on the bases. The two plans have been horrible for about the last week and a half. It's, taking too big of a secondary lead at third base and getting thrown out when you got a chance for a rally. It's getting doubled off on a fly ball that you didn't read properly. It's running through a stop sign at third base. It's half-assing a ball in the outfield, not calling it off when there's 350 people in the damn stadium and you let it drop and it keeps the inning go. Those are the things that you can control. That's staying mentally in the game. And I'm afraid that the losing is piling up to the point that it's starting to break dudes mentally. And it sucks that that happens, but you see this happen to teams all the time that when things are going downhill. And I'm afraid we've reached that point. I know it's fixable. That stuff is coachable and easily coached out of. On the flip side of that, they can be coached to it all they want. Guys have to make that decision to make that play and stay engaged. The coaches can't do that for them. Matt Cotrero and Jose Alguacil have a 1,000 fielding percentage this year. There's only so much the coaches can do when these dudes are on the field. These dudes have to take to it, and it's on them. Like, they have to take ownership of this, because that is the stuff that is unacceptable. The losses are what they are, but it's the little things that they can control that are getting out of control right now.
And I want to say that it is, I still want to go back to them being, it's a young team, an inexperienced team, still trying to get their foothold, trying to press too much. I mean, all that stuff is still very valid and credible, but it, like you said, it's unacceptable. It's little league horse shit that should be coached out of them. It's even beyond Q and August. It's fundamental stuff that it just seems like they're trying to push to. Or even Nicky Lopez made a very errant judgment call yesterday that allowed us, instead of double playing and potentially getting two outs, trading two outs for one the other day, he threw a home, missed the out, inning extended, and then the floodgates opened after that. So
some
even veterans
on the rundown forgot to throw the ball to third.
Yeah. Well, no, wait. He was trying to, I think, I see what he was saying. Even Hudler was talking about that water should have came in from center field to cover second base on that. I don't know if that was Sally's fault. It was probably a whole team thing again. But again, yes, it's veterans making dumb plays on top of it. And it just feels like the youth is one thing, the inexperience is one thing, but just the mental lapse is just something's wrong. I don't know what's clicking, if they're just pushing too hard. I don't get it. We need to get it out of there, because it's not going to work that way.
Well, and the thing is, it's twofold. Like, on one hand, when you are trying to be a competitive team, you can't do stuff like that. This is the difference between a not-so-good record and an okay record, or an okay record and an above-average record. Like, this is costing a few wins. And this season, it's not going to matter. But I keep bringing up, and I think we've all brought up, the habits you build now. You're supposed to be laying the foundation now for the next successful team, and you're not doing that when you're making fielding mistakes, or you're making base running mistakes, or you're making even mistakes at the plate. Like, when you're doing that in such excess, and it's not like last year, I would argue, and I'm not in that clubhouse, I would argue the culture right now is a lot better than it was last year, and the 100%. Coaching staff that is better than it was last year. When those things are better and those factors are improved, and the mistakes are arguably worse than they were at any point last season, like, maybe I just don't remember it, but this specific, like, 2-week stretch has been really, really bad in terms of mental lapses. And maybe it's because they care too much and they're just trying so hard. And that would be a great spin zone way to look at it. It also could be, like Joel said, some guys kind of it's setting in. I don't think it's set in as much in this regard last year, so I'm not sure what theory I subscribe to, but I'm big on you're supposed to be laying that foundation this year. And I don't want to spend too much time, obviously, on this small topic, but speaking of small, it is a little league thing to do.
Yeah. I'm not trying to insinuate that dudes are checking out mentally at all. That just, when you see it happen in one game and it's a one-off thing, it's like, okay, they just had a bad day at the office and you can move on. When you see it happened, and then it happened again and happened again and happened again in a 3 or 4 game stretch, it's like, okay, how much of a correlation is it? How much of it is correlation and causation, right? And I hope that maybe they can flush it after this trip in Miami. They continue on the road trip in Baltimore. Maybe they get things right on that flight from Miami to Baltimore, and we're having a different conversation next week. And I think the biggest thing that made me question it was and I was at the game on Saturday. Ball hit to Bobby Witt Jr. and he just looked up quick and he booted it, which is something we haven't seen him do all year. And he's been one of the best defensive shortstops in baseball this year. And it's like, man, what is going on right now? Like, it's stuff like that. It's not like Edward Olivares had an error in the field tonight. We come to expect
that.
Yeah. When they put his hand in left field, like, that's the kind of stuff that can happen. Mm-hmm. But when it's some of your best defenders and your headiest players making those mistakes, it's like, how much of the losing is weighing on them, and they're pressing, trying to make the play and do more than they can control. Like, that's why the cliche of control what you can control and do your job.
That seems like what's happening. Like, you're trying your hardest and it's just getting more and more sunk in. It just kind of feels like it's the quicksand that Shane Falco talks about. So love me some Shane Falco, and maybe it's applicable here. We need We need a Thunder Ska or some kind of line dance in a jail cell to pull this team together and get out of that funk. Get a bar fight, for God's sake. Let's go.
What else we got?
And I am not, well, one more thing. Like, I am not, like, I don't need Matt Cotrera to be Aaron Boone and get ejected so much that you get suspended.
Sure.
But there are certain times where it's like, man, I kind of want him to fire up the boys and go lay into somebody, and, like, lay into an umpire just to get everybody going. Like, I think if the team sees that, he did it once this year, and I think they got to win the next day. Like, stuff like, sometimes you just need that. Like, there has to be a calculated thing. It can't be Aaron Boone throwing bitch fits every other day. But, like, I just want to see something like that. And I think some of that is Q growing into being a manager and finding the right time and place. Like, there is an element of that.
Give me a dugout clear. Give me a brawl. I feel like some physical violence could blow some steam off. It actually, the timeline on Twitter would absolutely explode. I just feel like it would be, getting all the negativity out and just punching a few dudes in the face. Maybe just get yell a little bit.
A little bit of the 2015.
I will say, the Mariners and Angels last year, that brawl they had on a Sunday afternoon, the Mariners went on a 14-game win streak after that.
Yep.
Just saying.
Yep.
I am not advocating for violence, but hey, who knows? Maybe it could work.
If it comes on a baseball diamond, I'm fine with it.
But before we get way too out of control here on this comment, go, then we start rolling downhill in the wrong direction. Thank you, Josh. That's Josh's occupation in the podcast.
I'm on fire.
There are some trade reports starting to come out with some Royals that are, as we move into the summer, we're getting toward trade season, which the Royals are going to be a part of and not in the way that we want. They're going to be selling once again, or all the Chapman, obviously, on the block. There are rumors that Barlow is there as well, and relievers are a great currency to have as you head into the trade deadline so the Royals can get something back. This was from Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic. For now, the Royals are giving teams interested in Aroldis Chapman two options, according to sources briefed on their discussions. Part with a better prospect package to control Chapman for nearly 4 months of the regular season, rather than 2 months of a team that would get by acquiring him at the August 1 deadline. The earliest he can get traded is June 15th. If he continues the way he's pitching, I'd imagine that he is on this team for about two more weeks, and or accept Chapman as a package with another Royals player, enabling Kansas City to shed payroll while ensuring a better return in a trade. I prefer the first option, if we're being honest.
Because second option doesn't make any sense.
The second option is gonna buoy the return, because you're sending a Jordan Lyles, a Brad Keller. If you package Barlow and Chapman, that could work, but like sending a shitty contract away with your best trade asset is not helpful.
Yeah. It's counterintuitive. They're not hurting that bad for money. They don't have a high payroll. They're not broke. Like I don't get that. I think Chapman is going to be traded. I think it's going to be by himself. They're going to net something better than what many expected coming into the season. It's not going to be anything crazy. Don't get me wrong. But the couple more months of control, that's a big deal. They could trade Scott Barlow. Like, here's a crazy concept. Trade them separately. Do multiple trades. Like, get rid of guys you don't want to keep. You don't have to put them all in one package. And in this case, it's not like you're saying, hey, here's two or three really good players. Let's get something big. You're saying, hey, here's one good asset and then one bad asset, and we're going to drag it down. So trade a couple of your good ones by themselves. And then if you really need money come this winter, execute a trade and offload some salary. That's the beauty of the offseason. You can do that stuff. I don't get why he has to say that. I guess it makes logical sense, but I would much put my money, if I had to, on that first one happening.
I was irrationally upset about this when I saw this report, because the only big contracts, and I say big, and that is relative, the only contracts above $4 million are Salvi Perez to make it $20 million. He's still owed quite a bit after that. Got that C on his chest. I don't think he's going anywhere. That leaves Greinke at $8.5 Lyles at 8.5. Ain't nobody taking Lyles off contract off of this. Greinke maybe, but I mean, he signed with Kansas City for a reason. I don't know if he would sign off on a trade to go anywhere. Barlow's at 5.3. The other potential was Keller at 5.7. These are peanuts. And this just goes to show, like, if this is really an option, if this is truly being spoken to other clubs as this is the two things, these are the two options, what are you going to pick? It's like, why are we so scratched for money that we're trying to offload $5 million contract? Because why are we so close to the margin that $5 million is a make or break, and to actually dilute the haul away from your best trade asset? I don't understand that at all. Their payroll is $94 million. That is nothing. That is nothing. Why are we so worried about money at this point? It's nothing. This is an assessment year. It always was going to be. That money's gone, man. The Hunter Dozier contract is gone. Yoran Yarbrough, money's gone. I mean, this is, it's just so, it makes me so, and obviously I don't know all the books. I don't know what the budget detail is, sure. But it just made me so angry that this was like part of the options that I want to defend Sherman to the death. I want him to be the owner that we all want him to be, and that he says he is. This is the kind of move that just makes me think that everybody booing him already and wanting him gone already after year three just gives them credibility for no stupid reason. Why is this a thing?
Well, obviously, more information. Yeah, more. We can just leave it there. But yeah, more information will come out over the next couple of weeks. I'd imagine by, I don't know, maybe 2-3 podcasts from now, we'll be talking about the return for Aroldis Chapman if he continues to pitch the way he has over the last couple of weeks. A couple of starting pitchers for the Royals have had a couple decent outings over the last week or so. Brady Singer and Daniel Lynch in that Colorado Rockies series. Now, for Daniel Lynch, the line itself doesn't look very sexy. 5 innings, 6 hits, 5 runs, 3 earned. But then he had 7 strikeouts, 1 walk. He gave up all of those runs in the first inning and really settled in after that. And I, being at the game, I was so upset, and not like at the fact that it was happening, but it was just the way it was happening. All of those runs scored, I still remember it, on a 78-mile-an-hour doinker, a 68-mile-an-hour doinker up the middle, and Aleris Montero hit a ball a million feet in the air that landed on the chalk in right field, and I looked it up after the game. The expected batting average on it was 090. So it was just the definition of just getting BABIPed to death. And some of it was because Bobby Wood Jr. made an error at second base and that just unraveled things. But what I like to see was he really settled down in that game after that. Commanded his off-speed stuff. He had really good command of. Fastball sat around 93, touched a 94. Didn't really diminish velocity as he went down. So it was good to see him hold some of that and gain a little bit of confidence after nightmarish first inning. And then it was fine. Brady Singer had probably his best start of the year on Sunday against the Rockies. 7 strikeouts, no walks. Only, funny enough, how many changeups do you think he threw? Any of you guys know off the top of your head? He threw 95 pitches.
He threw 2 in the first one and then 3 in the second, right?
He threw 4. Threw 4 changeups.
Yeah, really? I was gonna say 4. Hmm. And I saw one of them. I was at the game.
Yeah.
I was at the game and I was up the right field foul pole. Not a great vision. I just happened to catch it up on the reader. But yeah, I was very surprised by how many he actually threw at the end of the game.
Yeah, 50 sinkers, 41 sliders, but he had it working. His slider was about the best that we've seen it. He almost showed like 2 varieties of it. It wasn't necessarily a sweeper, but there were times where he'd throw it up in the zone a little and it would sweep. And there were times where he had a lot more north-south tilt on it. If he, you know, there are days where he has it working and we're going to come on here and go, sometimes he just doesn't need it if he's got command of the sinker and slider so well. And then he's going to go get shellacked in 3 outings and we're going to go, he only threw 4 changeups. What are you doing?
Exactly.
I can't figure out how to evaluate his changeup at this point, because there are some days where he doesn't need it. And then there are other days where he very clearly does. Now, the Rockies lineup is not good. Chris Bryant's on the injured list. Charlie Blackmon didn't play in that game. So how much can you take away from it? But considering the horribly rocky start he had to begin to the year, no pun intended, the last 2 outings have been fairly solid for him, all things considered. So it seems like we're starting to get back on the right track after about a 6-week stretch where it was what's Brady Singer doing? I think he's going to be able to build off of those last two starts. He had one against the Nationals that was okay. It wasn't spectacular, but I thought he generally pitched pretty well. But to command the ball the way he did with no walks is a pretty good sign to me.
Yeah, and I think you got to take it, like you said, got to take it both as a grain of salt. The Nationals are the Nationals. They're rebuilding somehow faster than the Royals, even though
it's starting having late. Juan friggin' Soto, Max Scherzer, and Trey Turner, helps.
That'll 100%.
That'll help.
That'll absolutely expedite things, but it's just like they're still not a great lineup. Colorado bat outside of Nolan Jones, who sees Brady Singer really well. He two rockets off that bat on Sunday. But yeah, I was really impressed with what Singer was doing. And I the last few weeks, I've kind of been looking at the evolution of what Brady Singer has done. And he is absolutely tweaking that slider. And it has become a little bit more horizontally friendly. And he's still got a little bit more last year's vertically. So I think you're on this up to Joel that there might be two different versions of that slider being held. And I, like you said, that command of that sinker was apparent on Sunday, that he was working down, working in on the corners on lefties, bringing it in on them, and then working outside with that slider on righties. So it was absolutely working. Everything was good. He looked really, really good. Very promising on that. And again, the Lynch start absolutely could have fallen off the rails early, but he responded, settled in, and started striking dudes out. And I think it was just a monster response from him against the Rockies on Saturday. So I was very, very pleased with what I saw from both those guys.
Yeah, no, 100%. And Singer, it's easy to bring up the stat because obviously it's in retrospect, but he got his hard hit rate in those two was 43% compared to his season average of 56. He's been getting pummeled all year, and that was an improvement. He had 8 whiffs on the slider in game one, 9 in the second start. And then Daniel Lynch, like you said, Josh, he didn't let the wheels fall off in his start. And in both of them, he's got the changeup working. He's had the slider working. The fastball has even got a few whips. I think he combined 3 in those two starts. And he's done a good job of attacking the strike zone, keeping it pretty consistent with the pitch mix. He had 36 fastballs, 30 sliders, 21 changeups, and then 35, 30, and 22. It's like he's been very, very consistent in those two. They both have 13 strikeouts in 2 of those starts, and then 3 walks and 4 walks. Like, they've been pretty similar in terms of like statistical output and limiting hard hit balls and a little bit of damage control, because things around them haven't been perfect. And we touched on probably 10 minutes ago those things that haven't been perfect around them. But I don't think you can see the past couple weeks of Daniel Lynch and Brady Singer and be anything other than optimistic for what they're going to do in the next few weeks.
It was very encouraging to see for some sort of stability in the starting rotation, because right now it's, you know, Singer and Lynch, we kind of know what you're going to get from them for the most part. You know what you're going to get with Zach Greinke. You unfortunately know what you're going to get from Jordan Lyles. And then Carlos Hernandez as an opener is a damn stud.
Yeah, I like that.
I love it. And I want to see a couple more outings before we really dive into it, but I think it is abundantly clear. And if you watch, the Royals actually played on FS1 yesterday, so I was able to catch the first few innings before parental duties stepped in. And then I kind of missed the bulk of the game, which was probably a good thing in hindsight. But it was the best that I've seen Carlos Hernandez look. He was electric. If you want one guy, if you want a key on one guy that this coaching staff actually knows what they're doing on the development side with pitching, he's a perfect example of that. I think he is one that you can really point to that they are trending in the right direction with this. This might take a little more time than we anticipated before the year. We're going to take our first break, and we will be right back after this.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Make sure you download our new app. Find it on the App Store or Google Play. Just search KC Sports Network.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
So this is something that we don't think is going to happen, but we're going to bring it up just in case because our buddy Josh decided to tell us something that he's going to do if it happens. But as it sits right now, there is a little bit of a logjam in the infield. People have talked about the possibility that Nicky Lopez could get traded. There's not really any national rumors out there about it, but I wouldn't be shocked if maybe someone kicks the tires on it and the Royals decide, hey, you know what, Michael Garcia, you have proven you are an everyday player. Michael Massey's been really good over the last stretch. We need Bobby at short. And you have the combination of Vinny and Prado at first. Nicky Lopez becomes kind of expendable. Matt Duffy has actually served pretty well. Mm-hmm. I'm going to continue to eat crow on that one. But Josh decided to tell us that if Nicky gets traded, he will eat a ghost pepper on the podcast.
Hang on. We already got a caveat this.
What was the official?
The official one, it was in response to our guy at Royals Report, Kev, that wouldn't be surprised if Nicky Lopez was traded in the next couple of weeks. Okay. Because that's the caveat, because there is a possibility that Nicky Lopez could be traded this year. I could totally see that, especially I think since he's back, his WRC plus is 144. Mm-hmm. His OPS is 856. That'll play, but I just don't know how real that is. We'll have to see if any other teams are buying that. His utility-ness is being utilized very well, especially since the Hunter Dozier DFA. I don't like that he's potentially a third base guy. I want Michael Garcia giving me as many reps as he can over there, and if that's going to be the situation, just let it be the situation. We'll just run with that. I do know that Q wants to use him as a defensive replacement there in close games with later in the inning for Massey at second base. I'm fine with that as well. So I know Samad Taylor is kicking the door down. Thick Lofton is absolutely on a heater down in Omaha. So there are options in Omaha that you could potentially replace him with, but I just don't see it happening in the next couple of weeks. I mean, we're just turning the calendar to June. Still seems very early to deal a guy that, I mean, does Nicky have 1.5 years or 2.5 years left in control?
He's a free agent after 2025.
Okay, so 2.5 years. I mean, he's still a veteran presence in the clubhouse. Whatever you value that is, this team clearly needs somebody to right the ship. So why not Nicky Lopez at that point? So I would be very surprised if he got dealt in the next couple of weeks, like Kevin, our buddy, said. And if he is dealt in the next couple of weeks, which I think I said that on Wednesday last week, so we're already a week into this. But if that is the case, I will eat a ghost pepper on this show, and the YouTubers will probably get a special treat with that. And I will talk about the haul of that trade without taking a drink. So I'm going to eat the ghost pepper, talk about the haul, and get a drink.
If it happens by the trade deadline, will you eat a jalapeno and do that?
Ooh.
Like at minimum.
It's a jalapeno. You could do that.
I could do that. I mean, there's some hot-ass jalapeno.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I think Taco Bell mild sauce is spicy, so I can't really talk too much shit because I'd literally cry on the podcast, but yeah.
I'm a 37-year-old father, too. I don't need to die on this podcast, but in the name of content, I think it's fair game. So let's say a jalapeno if it happens, a trade by the deadline this year.
Okay. I don't really have too much.
Yeah. Ghost pepper's good enough for me. All right, so this was something that I didn't know what I wanted to actually bring up, this may be just a rambling stream of consciousness for the next 5 to 10 minutes. So if you don't want to listen to this, you can just move to the next break. And we'll.
I think it's going to be worth listening to.
But I think it could be. This might be the most measured part of this podcast. Because
the most notes
I think
I have notes too. Yeah.
So this is all about Bobby Wood Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And other podcasts, other outlets that talk about the Royals have talked about Bobby. And there are some that I think are there is obviously valid concerns, at least early on. And now concerns is a relative term because he's 23. And then there's some commentary that I think has jumped the shark so far in the other direction that it's almost like people are just like, he sucks and we've just decided that he's terrible and I just want to be upset. Now, those people, most of the time, their opinion doesn't need to be heard, nor is it valid. But it's just wild to me. Like some of the commentary is out of control.
Yeah.
It has Bobby Witt Jr. been underachieving relative to the expectation that was put upon him when he came into the big leagues? Sure.
Hmm.
But is he still a 23-year-old that is still pacing for near a 30-30 season when everything is not clicking for him? Yes. Like there is, people almost want to just forget about that because they see some of the swing decisions and some of the pressing and some of that stuff. It's like, man, if he's doing this when it's not clicking for him, wait until it does.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to. It takes time. Like I've talked about this before. Like time, like success in the big leagues is not a linear thing, and it takes some people till halfway through year two or the beginning of year three for everything to come together. But he's still an elite base runner. When he gets on base, basically, if he hits a single, it's going to be a double. Like we know that. He has turned into an above average to damn near elite shortstop, and he has shown flashes with the bat of what he can be. Now, has he put it all together consistently? No. But not many young hitters do. Like there are very, very few that do. And that's why they're like Juan Soto, who is going to be in the Hall of Fame. Like there's levels to this. And I think some of it is, and I know Josh, you probably want to talk about this because I think this is a text we had. Like he was touted as the best prep shortstop since A-Rod. Mm-hmm. And so that's what gets put into your brain, that's who he's going to be. He was 30-30 in the minor leagues, so one full year. He comes up, he's going to be A-Rod. Because he's not, he obviously sucks. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, I don't know. Like, I think there are reasons to be, like, to be frustrated, upset. And then there are also, it's like, the kid's going to figure it out. Like, I don't know. I try and sit in the middle on this because I think some of the commentary is insane.
Well, so I agree with everything you just said. I think, yes, he has been technically underachieving. Yes, he has been improved on defense. So like the wins above replacement, still fine. He's probably been the best player on the team overall this season because of that. Like if you look at the WAR on the Royals, I'm pretty sure he's number one. That's all fine and dandy. He has a 73 WRC plus in the last month. He's also slumping. On the flip side of that, he still has the rest of June, all of July, August, and September to have his numbers climb back up. So I think compared to the superstar slash like regular star slash savior level, yes, he's underachieving, but some of those counting numbers do matter. Like that is star level stuff, and the defense has been star level stuff. So what I did, I focused strictly in WRC plus is probably my favorite stat to look at in terms of offense because the hundreds league average, all that good stuff. I looked at the shortstops with the highest average WRC plus since 2010 who played at least 300 games. Fernando Tatis Jr. is at the top with 149. Gleyber Torres is listed there at 114 at the bottom.
He was good when he first came up. Yeah.
I listed their second year and their third year, and I cut out like if they played, let's say, 20 games their rookie year or whatever. Like I tried to be as fair as I could, give Bobby Witt Jr. a bit of the benefit of the doubt. He started with the team, so it's a little bit different for him. But there are three. So that's two options per player, and there's 10 players. So there's 20 possibilities here. Bobby Witt Jr. has an 83 weighted runs created plus heading into today's game that the Royals lost, by the way. Not really important. The only seasons I could find of those players that were comparable or even close, like less than 110, Trey Turner's third year, he was 104. Torres's third year, he was 107. and Tulo opened up at 109 and then 83. Seager popped right off the bat. Bo Bichette popped right off the bat. Carlos Correa popped. Xander Bogaerts, Lindor, Hanley Ramirez, Tatis. Like, I'm not saying Bobby Witt Jr. can't figure it out and become that star-level guy, because Marcus Semien was under 100 for 6 years and then suddenly became a really, really good hitter. Javi Baez was at 89 for 400 games and then had some good seasons. Now, if Bobby Witt Jr. turns out to be Javi Baez, that's going to disappoint some people, but he'd still be a recognizable quote-unquote star-level player. So I'm not writing him off as a top 20 to 30 to 35 MLB player. I don't think it's impossible that he becomes a superstar. It's even top 20. I'm saying, for me personally, he's been even below what I expected of him, which has been like a star-level player, but he's also, what, 200 games in, if that, yeah, like right around. There's still time. So the nuance is, yes, this has been disappointing. Yes, this has been impressive. And yes, there's also time for those to kind of bridge that gap a little bit.
I completely agree with both of you guys. The nuance thing, I'm going to sit the fence too, because I can see both sides of it very clearly. I mean, the chase rate has got to, the chase rate, the whiff percentage, the chase percentage, all that stuff's got to be corrected. No doubt about it. His on-base percentage has to get better. The flip side of this is whatever you put in, how much ever stock you put into this, his BABIP is 263. It is what it is. It should be around 300 usually. Last year was under 295. So judging, going off of that, his expected batting average is 271. His expecting slug is 5.
He's been hitting the ball hard in the air, yes, right at the launch angle, the last 2 weeks.
He's popping up a little bit more than usual, but the line drive percentage up, the barrel percentage is up, the exit velocity is up. Everything you want up when he makes contact with the ball is up. And that kind of leads me to his expected OPS is somewhere like 814. And there's only been, I mean, that's like a, if you add in his defense, it's like a 5.9 F4. And since 2000, there's only been 24 players that have been 23 years old or younger post a season above 5.9 F4. So if we're talking about his expected stats, his expected OPS, and his expected F4, he is still a very, very good player. I think that it is foolish to go ahead and chalk it up as a loss, like some of the people are choosing to do in our mentions. But it just, I don't understand. I understand being disciplined or being disappointed in what he's done. I think I agree that there are plenty of things that he can do better. He needs to hit fastballs. If he hits fastballs, if he starts looking at fastballs and hitting them, making contact, even fouling them off, he will improve so much on that part in and of itself. So I think, I mean, you talked about Zumwalt in the independent, you know, plans and stuff. I got to think the fastball identification and being able to do damage on those fastballs is going to be key to Bobby Witt coming out of this disappointment so far. But I think he's just got to relax a little bit more, and that goes for the fans too. I think we all just got to chill for a minute and take a little bit of a chill pill, if you will.
The combination of a player with high expectations that is underachieving with a fan base that is impatient, that wants to win, is an awful combination. It is right now, especially for a team that is losing a lot, that it puts a, you know, we look for blame. And it's going to go to the player that we all thought was going to be good that sucks, apparently, or whatever. The second coming of Jeff Francoeur, as someone put it in my mentions. F off with that. But the other part of this, and I mentioned it a little bit in that last statement, but the weight of the franchise is put on this kid at 21 years old. The Royals' plan last year very much seemed like, we're going to run it back with the same team, and we're going to put Bobby Witt Jr. on it, and it's going to save us all.
Mm-hmm.
And that did not work.
Like, do you want to try that shit, people? No. Like, I'm just saying, okay. I can barely, you know, live up to my, I can't even live up to my own expectations, let alone the weight of a city and franchise. Like, I think that's kind of bullshit that people, and that's not at all, I don't want anyone thinking I'm calling him, you know, not capable of doing it or whatever.
No.
Like, that is a task in and of itself, and that adds, so, you think he doesn't think about that? I would be surprised if that thought never creeped into his mind at any point ever.
So there's a certain element of, you mentioned some of those shortstops that you mentioned that came in. Like, obviously Tatis had a ton of expectations, like Manny Machado, was already there. Like, the culture was already established. I don't think he had, like, the franchise-changing pressure. Gleyber Torres played for the friggin' Yankees. I don't think he had that. Bobby did. Oh. And a couple of these, now, these guys are not – these guys aren't shortstops, but I think similar in that it's a team that is trying to win, and so they bring up this young prospect that's got the weight of the franchise on their shoulders from the second they showed up. And for the first 2 years, it was like, eh. Like, maybe they're good. I don't know. Like, Jared Kelnick had literally the worst major league debut ever for two years. First year, it comes up. Weight of the franchise. They're trying to win. Like, they're trying to win now. 20-year playoff drought. Jared Kelnick's going to save us all. /.881, .265, .350. Mm-hmm. And then the next year, Julio comes up, and Julio didn't necessarily have the same expectation, but he turned into that guy. And yeah, Jared Kelnick last year, .41, .221, .313. Comes in this year, year three, he's 23, pretty much been written off. Like, maybe he's a platoon guy at best. And while he has slumped a little bit over the last few weeks, he's still .270, .333, .49, .495 with a .131 weighted runs created plus. And he had the same sort of prospect pedigree as Bobby from the draft, both from draft and from the minor leagues. And another guy, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., came in at 20 years old, 80 grade hit tool, number one prospect, greatest prospect ever. You know, going to come in and he's going to be a part of the baby Jays, Bo Bichette, not too far behind. He's going to be the guy. All these expectations, -0.2 F war in 123 games his first season. Now the counting numbers look fine, like .272, .339, .433. He was supposed to go up and hit 35 home runs. He hit 15. And then in the 2020 season, he's 21 years old, and he slashes .262, .329, .462. And it's like, okay, maybe like with a .110 and .106 weighted runs created plus, it's like, okay, maybe he's going to be a solid first baseman. Like, I don't know. Like, I remember that conversation about Vladdy. Like, he's not the guy that we thought he was. Maybe he's a fine big league. Year three, .311, .401, .601, .166 weighted runs created plus, MVP runner-up. Sometimes it takes time. And so I hope that those two guys that I think had similar paths and similar expectations coming in, that it didn't happen right away, that it can't, like, it can and it's going to. Like, these guys are too good and too talented for that to happen. Dude's bust out. I don't think Bobby's that guy. I think he's flash enough that's not the case.
This is a fan base that had to wait on Moose and Hosmer for how long?
What, 3 years? I mean, 2 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we should know what patience is. And that's, I mean, just because he's the number two prospect or number two pick from a few years ago, that's the added pressure. I mean, let's just take a breath here, folks.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to take our final break, and we'll be right back, talk a little minor leagues and our hitter and pitcher spotlight of the week.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Make sure you download our new app. Find it on the App Store or Google Play. Just search KC Sports Network. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Welcome back. Be sure to hit that like and subscribe button on all platforms. We appreciate all the support as you guys are gutting through this season with us. For our pick, that's about the best way I could describe it.
It's a grind. Yeah, and it's June.
Yeah. So for the pitcher that we want to highlight this week, the bullpen has been kind of much maligned outside of Barlow and Chapman. Like, basically, it's like how do we get to those guys when they're winning in the eighth inning? But Taylor Clark has been very good for the past month. A guy that had a very inconsistent April. He'd have three shutout outings, and then he'd get blown up, and then he'd be fine, and then he'd give him a couple of runs, and then he'd be fine. He hasn't given up a run since May 2nd. That is, what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's like 15 scoreless outings.
Yep.
I think 14 scoreless outings. I did my math wrong there. Yep. And what's weird is he went for a guy that's got pretty good stuff. Like, he'll get up and he'll hit a mid-9. And he didn't have a strikeout for 6 straight outings and got out of innings. Mm. And a couple of them are multi-innings or an inning and a third. But for a bullpen that has a lot of volatility right now with injuries and just general reliever volatility outside of Chapman and Barlow, it's kind of been a mainstay and turned into that seventh inning guy that it helps shorten the game for this team. And with Barlow locking down the ninth the way he has for the last month, Chapman locking down the eighth the way he has. Clark can lock down the seventh. It helps shorten the game. You don't need, you know, you can pick somebody for the fifth or say, or if your starter gets you to the sixth, and then boom, you go to Clark in the seventh and you're good to go. It's a really welcome sight for a guy that was very up and down last year. It seems like he's really settled in. ERA is down to 2.89, 32 strikeouts to 9 walks this year. So the walks have come down for him, which was a problem last year. You know, shockingly enough, as the Royals led the league in walks last year. It's good to see. It's really, really good to see.
He's been great. He's striking guys out more often than he has. He's leaving more guys on base than he ever has. He's getting more infield fly balls, more soft contact than he ever has. He's 75th percentile or better in 6 different things on Savant, 98th percentile in chase rate. Like, guys just aren't hitting him. He's using the four-seam fastball, so he jumped from 53 to 42 from 2021 to last year. That's down to 27.5% now this season. The intro of the sweeper has helped his arsenal. He's using it 23% of the time. Like, that's a big chunk. He's not like a Brady Singer, I'm going to throw this changeup, get me over 8%. Like, he's effing using it. Guys are hitting 227 off of it. It gets 3.5 more inches of vertical movement than the average sweeper. So, like, it's a combination of the fastball going down, the sweeper being implemented. Opponents are hitting the ball less often. When they do, they're hitting it softer. They're missing a lot more. Talk about a potential trade piece. Like, yes, he's arbitration eligible the next 2 years. Yes, he just turned 30 in May. But, like, if the Royals want to sell high on him, which personally I think I probably would, he's only making just over $1 million this year on arbitration. So, like, talk about a guy they might want to look into trading. It's one of the benefits maybe of having a career year borderline from him. Maybe see what you can get.
I think, Joel, you talked about, like, Lynch and Singer kind of being the the guys that this pitching coaching, you know, change kind of hung their hat on. I think Taylor Clark is Carlos Hernandez. You're right. Carlos Hernandez. I think Taylor Clark has absolutely got a case for that too. His K percent is up 20%. His whiff percent is up 14%. His Z swing percent is down 12.5%. The Z contact is up 3.5%. So to me, that kind of tells him that hitters are kind of more off balance when they're up there against him. They're not seeing him very well. I think that is both the testament to what Clark is doing on the mound, but also the game plan against these guys and what Taylor Clark does well. And I think that that comes from the coaching as well. Jordan mentioned the sweeper kind of bumping up the rest of the arsenal, making it look better. I totally 100% agree. Changed the shape of his slider, which is now generating 38% whiffs, which is huge. And that sweeper is a 31.9% whiff rate. So it's just, if you want to talk about the changes that this pitching coaching staff is implementing, I think Taylor Clark is a very good symbol of that. And I agree. And it would be tough to see him go, but I'd love to watch him leave. That's not the context of that quote, but you know what I mean?
That rhymed, by the way.
I'm a poet, and I didn't even think about that.
So for our hitter spotlight, can I call an audible and can we talk about Michael Garcia?
I don't have any notes on Michael Garcia, but we can talk about Michael Garcia if you want to.
So we mentioned Edward Olivares, who I think...
There's really nothing that fucking... Sorry, I didn't want to...
No, you did. Like, you dropped it.
What are you supposed to say? Like, he's been Edward Olivares, and yeah, the power's been there, and he's hitting the ball harder, and he's hitting the ball the opposite field. Like, he's 27. He doesn't play defense. He's a platoon bat against righties. Like, he's the same, largely the same Edward Olivares. So we can talk about Michael Garcia.
The one thing that I was going to bring up in my notes, and I saw Alex Duvall, Rose Farmer, brought it up right like 30 minutes ago. I was talking about how Edward Olivares could be a trade candidate. And I think that that is absolutely a possibility because, A, he's young. He's got athleticism. Yes, he does have injury in the past injury history. But his bat is kind of undeniable. I think it's for real. I think it's been proven real at this point. So if somebody needs a DH bat, a young, cost-controlled guy that can produce for the most part and maybe play some outfield, that's fine.
Franchi Cordero trade.
Franchi, yeah. I mean, I think he's got a lot better than Olivares, or sure. Olivares is a lot better than Franchi. Both very similar in the field. But I think that that could be potentially, there's a little bit of a logjam in the outfield. I don't really see, obviously he's not going to be playing much DH in this roster. So I think you should really start to look at Olivera, see if there's any interested teams and see what you can get back for him.
Sure. Joel, you got something on Michael Garcia?
I want to, I feel like you're going to need to cut.
Your play clock's winding down, buddy. You called an audible. That the coach's helmet's shut off at however many seconds. That's why Jared Goff sucked when those the late in the play clock.
Yeah, because Sean McVay has 50 yeah. word play call.
McVay couldn't whisper sweet nothings or, you know, scream into his headset.
Well, first of all, Michael Garcia hit his first big league home run. And sure for a guy that's basically Nicky Lopez, as we were told in the beginning of the season, I don't think Nicky Lopez is hitting 414-foot oppo pieces at Kauffman Stadium.
Who told you that? Did I say that?
No, somebody else.
I made it.
Probably some moron on Twitter that doesn't know ball. Probably multiple morons on Twitter.
Probably. But, like, if Nicky Lopez ever hits a ball 414 feet, I'll eat a jalapeno on this podcast, or on this podcast, because I don't think that's ever going to happen, ever. I don't know if he's ever hit a ball 414 feet in his life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's elite defense. He's shown some of the best play discipline on the team. He's hitting line drives at a rate only Nick Prado is hitting more. He's got one of the lowest chase rates on the team. He's got one of the lowest swinging strike rates on the team. He's proving to be an everyday big leaguer right now. And there is no reason why he is. I think he's a legitimate part of the future on this team.
I agree. I don't have too much to add. I think I still want to see more from him. But like, I think we talked about, like if there, Joel said something in the chat. I can't contain myself. I if you would have asked me before the year, like which prospect would be the most like Vinny Pasquantino, only in that I would like be pretty confident that he'd be able to stay the course and offer quite a bit for a long time, it was Michael Garcia. And like, I still believe that. Nothing he's done has dissuaded me from believing in that. And like, the peripherals look great. Follow at Royals Farm Report on Twitter. He is like on watch of that stuff 24/7, and it's all been good. So I don't have too much more to add.
The thing that kept coming out to me was, I don't know, remember it was a Piccolo or what, the preseason I'm talking about how they think of him as Tim Anderson with the plate approach. And that has got me kind of all kinds of excited because I love me some Tim Anderson. So he also kind of makes Bobby Witt Jr. somewhat tradable. Just going to say that.
And that's going to do it for the Royals Farm Report podcast. Good God.
Yeah, do we have one more topic, Joel? Joel doesn't know what to do every time Josh brings that up.
Every time I say that, I lock Joel up real bad. But I'm kind of serious about it at this point because Michael Garcia, I have to think, is somewhat open to an extension, probably more so affordable than Bobby Witt Jr. He's not going to be as good as Bobby Witt Jr., but his elite defense, he does a lot of the same things that Bobby Witt Jr. does. It's just like diet Bobby Witt Jr. I just feel like you can get potentially a absolute haul for Bobby Witt Jr. And if you don't think there's any way that you're going to be able to extend him, you got to entertain the idea. And I think that has already been thought about within the organization at some point. I think down the road, I think it's a real reality that we can really start to get used to at this point, but it's still further down the road. It didn't necessarily have to be now. I'm just saying Michael Garcia, his presence and his production so far can make that somewhat palpable.
He's saying get on the horn.
Josh, my sweet summer child, can we please stop with that?
Josh is just playing armchair GM, and it is, I love it.
I will never stop. Not even if there's a fire.
Should we talk minor leagues?
Let's talk minor leagues.
And then get the hell out of here.
One of the biggest stories this week. So Frank Mozgato had a great start against Down East. 5 innings, 10 strikeouts, 3 walks. Got it. He's third in all of minor league baseball in walks or in strikeouts with 74. Looking like he's just going to continue on this war path in the Carolina League and get up to Quad Cities here pretty soon. And then we got a tweet from Annie Rogers on Saturday during the Royals-Rockies game that said Frank Mozgato was in a collision during practice with a teammate. And he was put on the 7-day IL, which is basically the concussion injured list. And he's going to be out for at least a month.
Fuck!
And we're back.
Two of those.
I had to get my one in. Yeah, we might need to flag this one. This season is just Murphy's Law. Like, anything that can go wrong has. And Frank Mazzucato was one of the bright spots that we had across the entire organization. And now he's out for a month. Come on, man. Now, Brent Cuterno and Shane Panzini had great starts this week, too, in Columbia. So, like, the young pitchers are really coming into their own. But Mazzucato was completely, like, justifying the Royals taking him at 8 this season. He was. He had been incredible. And, of course, now he's hurt. And he's not going to pitch for at least a month. Hopefully they
silver lining. Silver lining is that's just more tread that he's going to have next year.
I guess. Yeah.
That's not real. That's not a real thing.
Pain, man.
All bad. Yep. All bad.
Not good. That is my analysis of Frank Mazzucato getting hurt. It is not good.
Yeah.
Josh, what do you got? Minor league
wise. Bright spot also in Columbia. We haven't talked about Steven Zobak very much.
Absolutely. So good. That guy needs to be in Quad Cities. He's just been bullying people all year.
22-year-old in Columbia, so he's about of age, according to BREF, as far as like Columbia goes in A ball. 1.8 ERA after 4 starts. He's given up 5 earned runs in 25 innings. He has a strikeout percentage of 33% to a walk rate of 3%. We got him in the 4th round of last year's MLB draft. It's probably, it's looking pretty damn good. That's a lot of fun. Steven Zobak needs to get some more flowers, I think, more respect on his name and get him up to Quad Cities as soon as possible. So there is multiple bright spots there in Columbia outside of Frank Mazzucato, Kurna, Panzini, both pitching really well. So Steven Zobak, those 4 in that rotation down there are very, very good.
Steven Zobak tonight, he started tonight for Columbia. We're recording on Tuesday night. 4 2/3, 4 hits, 1 earned, 3 strikeouts, 2 walks. ERA still 1.82. He's been ridiculously good.
Like it.
My shout out, Will Klein. I think there's a soundbite out there from spring training when a certain somebody said that Will Klein was going to have a good year. Not to toot that person's horn, because usually they're wrong like 99% of the time, and they still could be here. Anyway, Will Klein, 3.76 ERA with a 2.81 FIP. He's getting BABIPed all the hell. It's 4.03 this year after it was like above 400 last year. But 41 strikeouts to 13 walks. He's cut down his walk rate over half from last year. He's allowed 1 home run all year. His last 4 games, 2 innings pitched with no runs allowed in each of them, 2 total hits combined in those 4 games, and then 3 walks to 14 strikeouts. He's a guy that I think before the season there were even people, and it wasn't even me, that said he could potentially be at Kauffman Stadium on the back end of the year. I think with his age and development, he is a prime candidate to skip AAA potentially at some point and just come up. I don't know what type of Dylan Coleman back of the bullpen profile you'd get with Will Klein and a Dylan Coleman, and Chapman will probably be gone at that point. Barlow could be gone at that point. Stalmont. So there's options for the Royals bullpen. Even if you just promote him to AAA and see what he can do there, I think some sort of challenge is probably coming for Will Klein over the next month or so. And it's probably deserved, because he is really cutting down on something he really, really needed to trim up before the year, and he's doing it.
I'm going to keep shouting him out because he has been easily one of the best prospects in the system this year, outshining the number one prospect in the system, Javier Vaz.
Yeah.
Again, this week, 346, 393, 692 slug, 8 RBIs, had 2 more stolen bases on the year, 2 slashing 295, 376, 490 for a 148 weighted runs created plus. He has 19 walks to 13 strikeouts, 12 stolen bases along with it, and really solid defense. This is a real prospect. This is not just like a really good story that the Royals got in the mid rounds. He is legitimately playing his way into where does he fit on the big league roster by the end of 2024? Because he's just going to keep hitting this way. Like he did it last year in in low A, and had a 120 in low A, and he's gotten better. And he's added more power, and he's still cutting down on the walks. Like, it's a really good thing to see for the Royals. But they got another guy. Shout out to Danny Ontiveros for getting another mid-round guy, that college bat that just mashes. Mm. And it's really, really good to see. And it's not like he's as awesome as Luis Urias has been, and he's hitting over 400 right now. Like, Javier Vaz is doing similar things, like slashing the ball with a little more power, and he's hitting the ball harder, more consistently than Luis Urias does. Not saying he's going to be Luis Urias.
That's not what
that's
heard.
What you just said. Yeah.
Not what I just
don't,
heard.
Don't walk it back like now, buddy.
Like the approach of spring to the fields. He does.
You stood in it.
Sure. Yeah.
I will say, though, like, and this is my final thought before we get out of here. It has been freaking incredible watching Luis Urias at the plate when he's playing the Royals.
He's so fun.
It is ridiculous. And I know that this comp is going to feel gross, but it's like the closest thing we've seen to Tony Gwynn. Seriously, like with the he does not strike out. He's going to slash the ball all over the place. And it doesn't matter what you do. He's just going to find a way to slash a ball to the third baseline. He'll swing in the batter's box. Like, it's incredible.
What his strikeout rate's 4.8%.
4.8%. I think Carlos Hernandez got him to swing and miss at a pitch yesterday, and I was like, oh, that works. Like, can we count that as a strikeout?
Yeah.
I remember, that Pablo Lopez trade, I was just like, what? For Luis Urias? I mean, he's fine, but Pablo Lopez pumped. I mean, now I get it. Credit to the Marlins for seeing that.
He could be the first player since 2000 to hit 380. No one's done it since the late 90s. And then obviously he'd have to hit like 406 the rest of the way to hit 400. But he only has to hit 370 the rest of the way to hit over 380.
Only 370.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do. Fine. Like, come on.
Fine. And to do that in an era where it has never been harder to hit a baseball, and he's hitting he's hitting 400. It's June 6th.
Yeah. Yeah. That's insane. Insane. That's a good way to wrap it up.
Yep. Thank you guys so much for bearing with us. We will talk to you next week, and hopefully we have more good things to talk about, or just anything good to talk about. Be sure to hit all, like, subscribe, follow us on Twitter at @OneRoyalWayKCSN. Subscribe on YouTube. Tucker is doing a series now where he's really rebuilding the Royals on MLB The Show. So be sure to check that out. Subscribe, follow on all our audio channels, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to KC Sports Network. We appreciate your support. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard. You can find all six of our channels covering the Chiefs, Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain. Educate. Inform. KC Sports Network.